Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show.
Morning, guys. This is Matt from Matt's Mods, and you're listening to Pixel Pie podcast.
G'day, Matt. How you doing?
Not too bad myself. You, Sue?
Yeah, doing good here, man. Doing good. We were just sort of chatting about, I just put the fan on because where I'm in Australia, it's a bit warm, and you were talking about getting a blankie. Isn't it a crazy world?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's typical British weather at the minute.
Well, this
gray,
is
windy and miserable.
This is typical Queensland, Australia weather at the moment. It's warm and the breeze is warm and the shade's a little bit warm. And
yeah.
I went out
rubbing
for it. Yeah, I can whinge though. I tell you, I can whinge about it because, you know, you walk out and you go to the car. And I'm a sweaty dude.
I'm with you.
I have a high BMI. I'm probably about I think you said you're 5'8". I'm about 5'8" and about 95, and I think I'm pretty strong.
Oh, a bit heavier than that.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty strong, so I'm not fat, but I sweat. I'm a sweaty dude.
Yeah.
And Queensland weather just encourages it, the humidity. So, yeah.
But by the standards of BMI, yeah, we're at the top end of that.
BMI is bullshit, man.
It is.
I think, like, for my height, I'd have to be about 70 kilo or something. I think that'd be just like
something horrific. Yeah.
Bones and a brain. Yeah. That's all would be left of me. Anywho, no one wants to hear about our dad boards and shit. Dude, you are Matt West from Matt's Mods, and you've got some pretty rad Game Boy stuff going on, and probably a bunch of other stuff that I'd really like to sort of talk to you about. These conversations aren't just about, hey, tell me about your Game Boys, because if we look at your Instagram, we can tell a lot about your Game Boys, but there's always a bit of a backstory to someone, you know, whether it be the artistic side or whether it be the, you know, getting into the circuitry side, there's either someone's really adept at something else or has nothing to do with it, and it's the opposite to what they do. Some people are like, I don't know, a corporate banker. I know a couple of lawyers, and that has nothing to do with the reasons why they collect, you know, retro games, obviously.
Of course.
You know, So let's get into that, Matt. Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I guess maybe a little bit of growing up as a young Matt, and maybe lead us down that path of why now you have some of the raddest looking custom Game Boys in the universe that we know.
Thank you. Well, I suppose I'm 32 now. I live in Southeast London / Kent, the lovely Garden of England. I'm a massive car guy. Massive. That's my first hobby.
We'll get into that, but what sort of cars? Like just cars in general, or you got a particular flavor?
Racing. I really love my track action. I drive on track, I watch track racing. So anything to do that, I'm there.
Okay.
But Game Boys, I suppose I started just like everybody else when I was 10, 11 years old. I had a yellow Game Boy Color. My brother had an Atomic Purple, I believe. And we accumulated a teal Game Boy Color from somewhere. I have no idea whose it was.
Yeah.
Because my third brother didn't turn up until about 10 years later. But as a child, they were obviously, you know, they were your best friend. They went everywhere. If you took them to school, took them out with your friends, with your link cables.
Was it Game Boy Color was kind of your where you landed?
Yeah, that was my one. Yeah, that was it. And the Pokemon games. That was me as a kid. Pokemon, I loved the TV shows, the cards, which you'll see on one of my last post, actually.
Yeah.
But
see some cards starting to rock up again. What are you collecting? Yeah, are you collecting originals or what are you?
Just the originals, yeah. I'm a slap of nostalgia. I'm at that age now where I'm 32. I make my own money, I do my own things, I pay my own bills, but I've got some left over for me to enjoy me. And I do love the reminiscence of the good old days when life was simpler. And you know, my three Game Boys, mine, my brothers, and whoever's this third one was, who we now have been sat in a drawer in my house for as long as I can remember. And they obviously came from us with our last house, because we moved house in 2006. So I was obviously past the Game Boys then, but they've been in a drawer since then. They've survived a house fire. And I suppose like a lot of people during lockdown, they were there. I found them. I thought, oh, these might work. Threw some batteries in, and there we are. I also found my original games, which was I've got Pokemon Blue, Red, Yellow, Gold, and Silver. So they were sort of shared between me and my brother. And then, like everything, I feel like, you know, Instagram and Facebook are then spying on us and listening to our conversations, because out of nowhere, I then start getting, you know, Game Boy related stuff on Instagram pop up, and
I see
Game Changer mods, just, and
you've only got to look at a couple and like what, this, and all of a sudden you're like,
that's it.
Just opens the door for me, doesn't it?
And I started doing a bit of Googling and come across Jelly Belly Customs, and I didn't want to do anything too technical. I didn't want to destroy them. I didn't want to do anything. I just thought, whilst I'm sat at home, this is what I'm going to do. And I ordered a TFT drop-in, a smoked cleared black shell, and some glorious green button from Jelly Belly Customs. Put it together, and it's kind of been a thing from then, because as the screens got better with time, I then went to an OSD screen, and my brother then wanted one, and a friend wanted one, and then it just kind of roller coastered into this, where you've got something so simple to work with, with a range of customability that matches anything else, because you can have two Game Boys that will never have the same. It just started to evolve into a place where, you know, people just wanted bits that I'd done, and I thought, okay, this could be an opportunity for me just to, you know, I'm not trying to quit my day job, I'm not trying to, but you know, sometimes these little bits and pieces pay for a week's worth of petrol for me to get to work in.
Yeah, right.
And I get to fiddle around with stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've met some good people through it, and it's weird how the hobbies work. Same with the cars. Most of my friends have all come from my hobby of cars, and it's a great little place to be.
Yeah, right. That's cool. I see you've got you got Greg's book there. Game Boy modding. So is that something that you picked up early and kind of and you found that useful?
Yeah. So again, it was Greg's page was probably one of the first ones that I see that really popped up. And then I had 8-bit aesthetics as well. You know, some of the custom paint jobs and the color combos that they're doing on their page. And I thought, right, okay, there is obviously something going on here that people want and are still demanding, because these guys are, you know, they're huge, you know, 50,000+ followers, and there must be a market for what they're doing. But I ordered Greg's book because I'm not, you know, I sit here, I'm into my cars, and I'm not the most massively mechanical minded person. I can work on cars fine. I'm not really that great with electrics. I had never soldered since school. So I grabbed Greg's book, and it's got so much information in there, just basic stuff that makes you think, okay.
It's a great book. It kind of, when I've had Greg on, I've chatted with Greg, and it reminds me of, I used to have an old Volkswagen Combi, it was a 62.
Yeah.
So we'd had semaphores, and it was a split screen and that sort of stuff and everything. When I got it, I bought a book that was written by a dude that, you know, was Californian, and, you know, that was like Combi land. And it was very similar. It had like kind of cartoons through it, and there'd be these little directions on, like, if you're going to adjust the clutch or the handbrake or something and be like, okay, reach under the, have you got this and have you got that? Okay, now, if you look to the left, there's a big 3/8 blah, blah, not that one, the one to the right. And just this way of just delivering the information, you can just, you can almost hear him talking as you're reading the instruction or his little stories of his experiences. It's such a good book. Highly recommend
exactly.
it.
I mean, I don't know if you guys over there have them, but with the cars, there's a line of books. They're called Haynes manuals.
Right.
And they are literally, you could buy them for a specific car. Not so much the newer stuff now, but...
Yeah, but if you had a 78 Cortina, you could just go get that book.
Find one.
And do anything you want on that car.
Yeah. And I mean, I could be mistaken. I know that Nat the Nerd's doing Modded Game Boy Club and she started up a small sort of forum. But forums for me with the cars were massive because it was a place for people to post that required help. And you'd have a community of people that were all included in exactly the same hobby who have either done it, want to do it, or are trying to do it. Yeah. And they would then offer their, you know, their help, which...
Yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to conceal every item of what I do paint wise. I have people message me now quite often asking me how I do it, and I'm very happy to explain it. You know, I've not reinvented anything. I've just taken a different twist on it. And if somebody else wants to, I'm not going to use the word copy, but imitate or
emulate,
modify what I've done.
Yeah.
But they just need a few sort of step-by-step guides, and I'm here for that.
We all stand on the shoulders of giants. There, everything's an advancement on, you know, like the reason why...
Exactly, that's it.
The reason why Tesla's building starships is because back in 69, a bunch of dudes went to the moon in a Coke can. Yeah. You know, like it's how it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's funny, the smallest things, you know, kind of going back to our car thing. I had a Forester that I did a lot of work to, and it's like
nice. You're
just trying to do some work in the dash and you're trying to pull the center sort of console surround off without breaking every clip. And you go on a forum and the dude's like, you just got to kind of push it in from the bottom left-hand corner. It'll feel like it's going to break, but give it a yank. Trust me. And you're like, oh my God, I could have definitely broken that if I just got angry and tried to force it. And these kinds of resources are just the same. Just chip away this little bit and just trust this and solder here and there and you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I've picked up a lot through people that have... that have been doing this obviously longer than me. I know there's a lot of people in the community, especially on sort of these pages, that have been doing it for a long time. But there's obviously a few as well that have joined quite recently. You know, I wouldn't say I'm a massive gamer. I'm not somebody that worships the Nintendos, but they were a part of my life when I was a kid. I'm never going to get rid of them. I've still got my original, like the shells from my originals. The board is in my current Game Boy. But the rest of the parts, they're tucked away in a drawer in case I ever wanted to go, right, there we go, they're going back together. But it's just something that I enjoy doing. I enjoy taking something and making it into something for somebody else. And, you know, just that little feeling around, it can't be an OCD, but it's, you know, I just enjoy doing it. So if I can do that with something else and then deal with other people, it's, you know, it's great. But it's certainly a lot bigger than I ever expected it to be. Even friends or my brother are so shocked at the market, dare I say, for Nintendo's. But I suppose it's like anything, there's going to be Sony people that are into Sony or Xbox and you know, Super Nintendo's, and every place has its one thing. Card collectors, it's just, unless you're in it, you don't understand that it's
the depth of it. It's
amazing. It really is. It's great to see that there's so many people still sort of messing around with things that I almost worshipped when I was a child.
Yeah. Oh, look, everybody will tell the, excuse me. Everybody will tell the story that, you know, you could have picked up the average, just pick a model Game Boy, you know, maybe 3 years ago for like $20, $15,
yep.
$5. You guys in the UK are really fortunate to get the like the kind of the boot sales and stuff, and the, you know, yeah, like I see the, I watch a few different toy collectors and stuff, and they just, it's like someone just says, here, there's, here's the paddock, and everybody just lines up in a paddock, and it's a, we don't really get, yeah, that as much here in Australia. It's a bit more kind of pushed into car parks, and it's a bit more, I guess it feels more regulated, but now you won't get, in my experience, and from what I can see, you won't get a Game Boy of any sort in any condition for under $100 if you're just going to buy it off marketplace. Yeah. It's bonkers.
It's
bonkers.
Yeah, it's you say about the boot fairs. I don't often get to go to them. I used to go to them a lot with my grandparents when I was a kid, and we get dragged around looking at back then what I thought was everybody else's junk.
This is boring. And oh man,
yeah,
stuff you could have picked up.
Now
back
I love
then.
It. I love it. I mean, I play football, so soccer, what if that's what you guys call it over there, so I'll play that on a Sundays, which is when we have boot fairs over here. But me, my brother, my girlfriend, his girlfriend, and a couple of others, we've, you know, if there's no game, we'll get up and we'll go, right, so we just go to the boot fair, even just for a walk, take the dog with us, and I'm on Game Boy hunt, but I cannot find any. They seem to have just taken them all from me, and I just want that one just to sit there and go, I found one.
Yeah, yeah, I'm the same.
I've had no luck.
Same with me, mate. I just, we do a lot of, like, you know, I don't know whether you guys call them op shops or thrift shops over there. Like this Salvos and things like that. And even those places, like I've been to them, I've seen like a green see-through Xbox, which I think is probably a better one. I don't even know what model it was, but this was in like an op shop and it was like $300. I was like, what? That's not even a deal. Come on.
We've got a store called CEX over here, which is like an electronics store. These guys are. I walked past one the other day and I think there was a standard, just a normal Game Boy Color that was sort of upwards of £100. And I'm thinking to myself, they've probably given the poor guy 15 quid credit for this. They're now expected. But somebody at some stage is going to go in there and buy that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It really is.
I was at a Supernova the other day. It's kind of like a Comic-Con or whatever you want to call it, with my daughter. And there was a guy with a vendor there with just a whole bunch of stuff. And one thing he had was an original Famicom, you know, the white and red one.
Yeah.
And it was kind of in its foam and it looked like it had the cables. And it was in a kind of like a sort of sealed clear kind of wrap. It looked much like, if you ever watch any of those videos of people like hunting through Akihabara and they'll see them kind of wrapped. This was $400 Australian, and it was moldy and yucky, and I'd be reluctant to suggest whether it actually still functions. And I was like,
"Yeah,
someone's gonna buy it. Good on you, mate."
Someone, at some
stage, Now let's have a little bit of a closer look at some of your builds and just the different, I guess, art styles that you do come up with. Now, I think the first thing I ever saw and asked myself, who's this dude, was a Super Nintendo. You guys call them Super Nintendos? Now, it's when I saw it, the word that's come straight to my mind was patina, and I'll describe it, and then you can kind of back up with your information. This is only one of about, I think, just flicking through your Instagram, three or four different sort of color schemes or processes that I think is unique, in my opinion. So this Nintendo, this Super Nintendo or Super Famicom, it could be used called also in some parts of the world, you've basically done underneath it a kind of like a rainbow of colors, and then you've covered it in a black, and then you've kind of sanded away some of the sharper edges, the natural edges, and that exposes ever so slightly the colors underneath. Now my daughter has these little books where each page is just black. And when you start to scratch away, you expose the image underneath. So that might help people to understand what you're, what I'm trying to describe here. So I saw the SNES, and then basically, if you sort of look through your Instagram, there's then a whole bunch of different
from there.
Concepts. The Game Boy colors seem to come up really sweet, because there's just so much sort of going on. There's this, I think you and I were talking about this once before. There's this strange kind of bevel on the front, it kind of runs down through the D-pad, it loops under the start select and goes back up through the B button. And you sort of don't really notice it. Well, I didn't really notice it until I saw your work and I was like, oh shit, Oh, isn't that really cool? That's so cool. So, yeah, man. I mean, did you fall over and bump your head in the toilet, or how did this come about?
So, if you're on my page right now, if you scroll down a bit further, there is a green, pink, and blue shell, which is the first patina that I'd done.
Yeah, it's got like a green D-pad and a pink B and a green A.
Yeah, that's it. So with this, I've been using, we've got a car store, like an automotive motor part store called Halfords over here, which sell a lot of car parts, and they sell cans of paint. And long story short, because of the stuff with the cars, I've got paint laying around, and I had a bunch of shells, and I thought, right, let's have a little go. I tend to find that these paints weren't very good for using on consoles and handhelds and plastics. It's just not as durable. It's not that great a quality. And I spoke to, I think it was Julianne, Gameboy.7777, and she'd mentioned that she'd used sort of graffiti paints for this, and the ranges, and again, at 8-bit aesthetics. I've spoken to them. And
Julianne does a bit of tagging.
She must be. We don't know. We might see some of that in Germany. I painted a couple of shells, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go and I'm going to find some paints. And funnily enough, my brother, who has absolutely nothing to do with anything like this, used to do a bit of tagging. He says, go on Graph City. And I was like, all right. He said, it's a website. You'll buy everything. I went on there and I bought a load of Montana. I bought a load of Montana Gold. And my personal go-to is Cobra paints. I have got on really well with Cobra. I don't know if they're...
What will you do with paints as far as the cars? Just like sort of bumpers and...
Wheels and sort of interior bits, anything like that.
Brake calipers and all the kind of rad bits.
Yeah, I've refurbed a fair few bits of those and stuff. But when these paints arrived, I'd obviously got myself some really bright pinks and some blues and some greens. Mm-hmm. And I just had a shell there and, literally no prepping to the shell. I just went up to it, painted a bit just because I wanted to see the colour. Let that dry, painted the next bit. Okay, and then I've done something else with it. And I have absolutely no idea why. I think I'm just trying to flatten the surface to make it smooth, because there's nothing worse. If you're having a painted object that you can feel absolutely everything on it. With these, the patina shells, they are like glass. You know, you're not feeling the sanded parts. With the splattered effects on the outside, you can feel them because it's naturally there. But with these, there's none of that. And as I was just sanding away lightly, I started to reveal the bits underneath. And I thought, hold on, I'm onto something here. And that was the outcome. And I thought, okay, if I can do this in a bit more of a controlled environment as opposed to just throwing some paint on, we might be able to do something here.
Yeah, cool.
And it evolved into what is now something that I do quite often. But I think the one that actually got my attention or got my patron attention is a few scrolls up. There is a Super Famicom Game Boy Color that I've done where I've got the gray D-pad button, and underneath that has a gray patina, yellow start and select on the select button, which had yellow, then red on the start, green on the blue.
Looks like you sort of smudged all the colors down.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that was, again, using the same process, and that got quite a lot of attention, a lot of shares, and I think that brought a few more people to the page.
Yeah.
And the Super Nintendo, and then, you know, I'd actually been commissioned by somebody who had obviously seen my page and had said, I want you to paint a SNES for me. Can you do it? So I've never done one, but of course. And I said to him, let me buy a Super Nintendo now. I said, I don't want to risk you sending me this from Germany, me doing something, me not really being able to do it. And I found one local when I picked it up. And sorry to those that love them, absolutely standard. One of my pals, he loves them, absolutely OEM. But this was a really, really good condition. Like almost, there was no yellow into the gray, anything. And I painted his one, which was barbarian. Yeah. No, I've horrified the nation and the world with my actions. But I then done his one, which was Baby Blue and Pink Splatter, because he'd seen something else that I'd done.
It's really gorgeous.
He also sent me a few retro controllers on old Xbox, and I think I can't remember what the other ones were. So I'd done a few bits for him, but he then sent me his SNES, because we'd done a sort of Part X. I'd taken into account that I was going to buy my own one. And I thought, well, maybe I could do it on the SNES. And they're so simple and so easy to take apart that, wallop, this is what sort of arrived. And that's actually supposed to be on its way to Noztec. If he's going to listen to this, I've been messaging him. He's been waiting for this. He won this on a raffle. But our post to Australia at the moment is horrific. They want well over in excess of £100 just to post it between the both of us. I can't afford to send that, because that means I've lost every penny that I've made on the SNES.
Yeah,
he obviously doesn't want to pay £100 for that. So we're working a way around. I went to the post office again recently. They're still like, no. They've told me it's probably best to send it in smaller packages, which means he'll end up receiving 1, 2, 3. But I know Australia Post is being a bit of a, they're in a bit of a situation as a, you know, naturally is expected at the moment. Yeah. But it's sat in a box, might probably be about 7 feet away from me, waiting to be waiting to be dismantled to go to him.
You need to wait till someone you know is traveling to Australia for a business trip.
I've got family in Australia that I've never met. I feel like I might need to go over there, and it's going to go in my suitcase and ring up at all of your houses.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just going to turn up one day and you're going to be like,
oh, dude, if you ever come over, make sure you let us know, eh?
Yeah, I will do. It's to be honest, it's something that I really want to go to. Whereabouts are your
family? Do you know?
I think Queensland, I think.
Well, that's where we are, so.
Yeah. I want to say Queensland. But
you do want to, because it's a beautiful place. Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to go to Steve Irwin Zoo. I've been fascinated with Steve Irwin.
That's like 45 minutes from my house.
Yeah, well, there we go. That's a date.
Okay.
We'll pencil that in one day.
I'll take you there.
That's it.
Yeah, that's harsh, isn't it? Yeah, the postage is bonkers at the moment. I remember a few years back I was into like drones, little quads and some other stuff and bits and pieces, and you could just... The Australian dollar was fantastic, and shipping was like, you get stuff from anywhere in the world within like a week and a half to 2 weeks. And now, man, it doesn't matter where I order from. I order stuff from the US. There's some of the bigger kind of retro gaming places can have stuff here in a couple of weeks. Some people have really got it together, and some people, some companies just don't. And you get shit just gets sent, and 4 weeks later, roughly, it turns up. It's bonkers. The stuff from the US is the same, eh? So yeah, and that's tough. Yeah, I mean, you've got there's a really nice picture here that really kind of, you've got a Game Boy Color, a DMG, and a GBA all sort of sitting together. You know, like so.
Yeah,
it's really interesting as a bit of a profile picture of the three handhelds to kind of see the little edges and bits and pieces. And I still think this particular one's really amazing, because you've kind of exposed around the Nintendo logo on the GBC. And the Game Boy Color, the GBA as well. But on the color, it looks cool, because the GBC, you don't realize it's kind of like molded into the shell. And it just looks patinaed and kind of like faded, and it's like someone had, you know, sometimes you see those really beautiful old like American muscle cars, and someone just goes and throws house paint on them, and you're like, oh, that's my gosh. And underneath somewhere you can see where it gets kind of lent on a bit, there's this beautiful color is trying to bang back through.
Comes through, yeah.
Amazing, dude. Yeah, I mean, so you've got that patina, you've got the beautiful SNES with the blue and the pink splatter. There's another one further down. Am I down or up? I'm just scrolling. It's the worst podcast ever when you're like, here. So there's a Game Boy Color, and it just makes me think of like Motley Crue. It's kind of black, and it's got these sort of diagonal lines of, it's just like, all I think is like, you know, they would all wear like, they have the big hair and like a bandana around his hair and, you know, or hanging off his tight jeans and things like that. That's pretty rad. I really, really, really like that one too. How did you sort of get that effect?
That is a very similar process to what happens with the patina shell. So you lay down the base colors, and then you use dish soap. So washing up liquid.
Right.
You spray that onto or lay that on whatever sort of design that you want.
Yeah.
That sort of forms a coverage.
Like a mask.
Over that paint. Yeah.
Oh,
and then
wow.
You paint, you lay the black down, and then once the black's dry, you literally rinse it under the tap. The dish soap goes, and that's there.
So what you're doing is you do like the three or four colors, like they're verticals down the console.
Yeah.
And then once that's done, then you basically just you put it down, say, on a piece of cardboard, and you just do squirt, squirt, squirt here and there.
Yeah.
And then you hit it with a black can. That is rad-ass. Exactly that.
It's that's Pig City. Tyler, he sent me a TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, but he sent me a TikTok showing that, and he said, as soon as I see this, I thought of you. But they were doing it on like sort of dishes or trays that you serve food on.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, I messaged him. I said, I'm having a go at this. And that was the outcome. And I've actually, a bit further up, Marky P.I., who is an absolute legend of a guy, I think that, you know, as someone that's got a big page, he gets really involved in sharing people's stuff and communicating with guys. I've actually got a collab with him. He sent me three shells that he said, dude, I need you to paint for me. I want us to do something together. And I said, by all means, send them to me and let me know what you want. He said, I'm going to let you do whatever you wish. And I've done him one like that with the dish soap. I've done him a patina, and then he sent me out. They're like the little Dreamcast handhelds, little tiny ones.
The memory VUs or whatever they are.
Yeah, that I've done in a chameleon flip purple and green paint, and it's come out amazing. He's received them now, and he messaged me and he said, like, thank you so much for these. He's absolutely over the moon with them. So it's, with that particular one, I get quite a lot of questions about that because I've done a couple now. I've done a Game Boy Advance shell too for Load of Old Tat, who he's the reason I'm now spending money on Pokemon cards as well, by the way. So I'm going to send him the bill for my recent order.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've done one, and I've now done a Game Boy Color for Tyler, the Pig City. It's Tamiya paint. A lot of people ask me what paint I've used. It's Tamiya. Model paint, and it's weird because on the lid you've obviously got this flip colored sort of color, I suppose, and when you spray it, it's clear, you can't see it, but you've got to then base it with the black. So when you're doing the insides of a shell, you lay that down first, and then you lay the black down behind it, and you know, there you go, you've been revealed the color that you're supposed to get, and vice versa if you're doing it on the top of a shell. You lay the black down first and then spray it as like a clear coat. But it's worked really well. I've done a PlayStation controller a while back where I used almost like how can I describe it? It's almost like a petrol blue turquoise. Right. Really lovely color. And then I used that Tamiya flip color as like a top coat over the top. And it really sort of gave this very subtle sort of purple tone to it, which, you know, from now on, you could spray it over any color and get some sort of rainbow effect. And the world of paint just allows you with so many things.
It's such a bizarre sort of chemical reaction. You're really playing with science, aren't you? And that kind of leads me to a couple of shells you got here, a Game Boy Color and a DMG, and they've got that kind of that crackled finish. They look unreal. We've spoken
about this one before.
That DMG looks amazing. That
DMG ones, that's your one. I believe I told you that's going to be the post to you when...
Just £100 to get it posted.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
I'd love to have that. Holy cow. You should definitely come to Queensland, mate. You should definitely come to Queensland.
That's it. That's so this again, was just paint underneath the colours that you want to be revealed.
Yeah.
And on Graph City, they do specific paints that have different effects, and this is a crackle effect paint, and you spray it over the top, and depending on the distance from the item you're spraying, the thickness of the layers that you're, you know, the coats that you're putting down, then determines how tight or how big the crackle effect is, because just above that one you've then got another shell which has got far smaller crackles, but again, it's just a different take on something that's going to be a little bit different to what somebody else is doing. Or
so how do you control the size of the crackle, or the density of the crackle? Is it closer gives you a bigger crackle, or
usually it's the thickness of the paint that you're laying on. So the thicker the paint, then the larger the crackles are.
Right.
So with that DMG, you'll notice on the sides, because you don't want to load up too much paint on the sides, it's a naturally thinner layer of paint around the edges, which then creates the smaller crackles. It's the lighter coats will give you tighter crackles and vice versa. But
I guess it's a ratio, isn't it? It's like if you pour a bucket of water in a space, it's going to cover some. And if you put more water, it'll cover more of the floor or whatever.
You best believe it's all trial and error. I've been through, for every good shell you see, I might have gone through two or three that haven't turned out very well. It's all of this is trial and error, because although you've got an idea in your head of how you want something to turn out, unfortunately, it doesn't always work like that, and paint will lay slightly differently. So I want to get an airbrush next, because I want to see if I can start having a lot more finer control over stuff.
Yeah.
And I also want to start doing, well, not doing, but I want to do for myself a pair of custom Air Force One night trainers. And again, that's something that I've now been looking into and doing sort of the splatter effects and whatnot on those. But for the shells, I think an air gun.
The Tamiya paints are great too. I've had a fair bit of experience with the Tamiya acrylics, and you just kind of buy like little pots, and you buy the thinner, and it's just sort of like, you know, a cap in top, and give it a good shake, and they'll stay there. They'll stay good for ages. I can pull them out every now and then and do stuff. I'm just watching the sorry listeners, I'm just enjoying myself. I'm just watching the little video on your Instagram post of that DMG shell as you move it around, and just little bits of color here and there. It's sort of making me grin a bit. That's insanely
rare. It's that one actually has the texture that you can see, although that's got a top coat over it.
I was going to ask you, do a top coat to kind of protect
them? I do a top coat on all of the shells. So I tend to use, I've personally found that Cobra satin clear coat is the, you know, for me has been great, because although gloss looks fantastic in certain lights and pictures, it also isn't that durable. You know, it's going to be far more resistant to scratches. It's going to be far less resistant to scratches.
Yeah,
it's going to show dust a lot more, and it's like car paint. You know, if you've got dirt or dust on the car and you sort of rub your hand across it, you're then putting micro scratches into the top coat. But when the sun comes out, they're there. And with the satin one, I found it so much more durable. You know, I run my nails across the top of them, not that I run around with massive nails, but enough to sort of, you know,
test
and they're fine. And it gives such a nice clean finish as well. But all of them get top coated to give that protection.
Now the cars have come up a number of times, so let's talk about that. There's one pic here which is you holding up what seems to be some sort of alcoholic beverage, but in the in front of that is a wheel of some sort. I think you and I have discussed this a little bit before, when I was like, don't tell me anymore. And you threw around the term overdrive Nürburgring fairly regularly. Let's make that the end state about this aspect of our conversation. How do you have a life where you just go and drive Nürburgring regularly? Tell me about that.
It's almost like a drug. That's the only way I can describe it. So I've been there's nobody really in my family that's into cars. It's just friends, and it's been the same when I was 15. I don't know if you do it over there in our sort of high school, we call them secondary schools, we do a placement for work experience. So you're there for a few weeks and all of the guys at work will go, I'm going to go work my dad on a building site, I'm going to go do this. I said, no, I'm going to Porsche UK, which is where all of the press cars come from. So I'm going to walk in there, I'm going to say, I want to do my work experience there, because that's my goal. I would like a Porsche of some sort. Ever since I was a kid, and I was lucky enough that my grandparents, who I spent a hell of a lot of time with during the school holidays and stuff, lived about 20 minutes from this Porsche UK garage.
Oh god, and it's like living outside Disneyland.
Yeah, and I went in there and they were very, very accommodating, very happy, and I spent 3 weeks there.
Oh my lord.
You know, like as a kid who, you know, reads the magazines, doesn't even have a driver's license at the moment. He's now looking at the cars that I wish to own one day. It hits you in the face. And then, you know, as the years go on, you know, I went through my first few cars, which were never anything special. And then I started getting into, you know, a bit more of the track days because I started earning more money. I could afford to do it. And now I drive... I've got a personal Instagram page, which is just sort of me, my girlfriend, and whatever I'm doing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But my original Instagram page was for my cars. It's M77MWW. I don't know if anybody wants to. I know there's a few car guys on there. I've got on the Game Boys and stuff. I've spoken to a few of them, but that's where my actual cars. I don't know if you could get that up. You'll soon find that there's a lot of car content.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I'm looking at it now. Because you link it in your bio there. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's...
So that's your grey Renault, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. So these cars I absolutely love. If you go down a couple, you'll see the red one. There's a picture that the two pictures of the red one, they're at Nürburgring. They are there. And I actually, my first trip was, 7 or 8 years ago now. And I had an Audi TT. And I don't know why I bought that car, because it's
the blue one.
Complete opposite of not the blue one. The blue one was a far more serious car. But the one that I'd had, I'd actually broken my leg playing football. And I hadn't had a car for ages. I'd been on crutches. And I just bought an automatic Audi TT. And my friend said, like, we're going to go to Nürburgring for the first time. And I was like, I'm there. And it's not that bad of a drive. It's about an hour from mine to the Euro tunnel or the train or the ferry that we get.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of 5 hours or so from there with a few stops. And I got there and every other car was either a Porsche, a BMW M3 or a Megane RS. I said, I'm gonna buy one of those Meganes. I got back, I bought the red one. I'd had it 5 or so years. I can't even remember how many trips now. I usually try to get out a few times a year. And
so just anybody can rock up? Like, how does it, do you have to have roll cages and fire suits and stuff?
No. So it's technically a toll road. So it's just a German toll road. Anybody can turn up.
Really?
You have coaches go around doing sightseeing and people on motorbikes, and it's the most obscure place in the world, because although it's a de-restricted toll road, it's still governed by, it's a very finicky sort of technical place if things go wrong, because they still abide by German road laws, but it is treated by 85% of the people as a track.
That's bizarre.
So you are going around as fast as you can. But it's the most dangerous place as well, because you can... I've been there personally, and it's been sunshine at the start. I've met rain in the middle, and then I've had snow and ice in the top of the, you know, the highest part of it. You just don't know what's going to happen, but it's... For anyone that loves cars, they will understand what I'm saying, that it's somewhere that you go and you will find the most vast array of cars you're ever going to see in your life. And they're all there just to do the same thing. Nobody judges anyone. Nobody is there looking down on others. I had a good lap with... So I've got a Renault Megane. I know you guys have them over there, because I know a few Australian guys have got them over there, but they're not a popular car. They're not very popular over here either.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's one of those brands that just doesn't have sort of... Yeah, the Clio's you see a bit over here, but yeah.
So I was having a good lap chasing a guy in a Clio who had done sort of an engine swap out of a Megane, and we'd had a good lap. So that each lap, I can do them in about 8 minutes, which is pretty quick. And we pulled into the car park. We had a good chat, and he was a German guy, and he was with with his friend in the passenger seat, and we sat there for sort of 10, 15 minutes, and his friend said, oh, I'm going to go grab my car now. So he's just been out in a Clio as a passenger, and he's turned up in a brand new purple McLaren 720S, a few hundred thousand dollars worth of car that he was having good fun with his pal in what would have been a $10,000 car as a passenger. And it's just, it blows my mind. I've got a lot of German friends now who I've met through just doing this. And when I go over there, they come and join and we do laps together. And it's just, it is a drug, because once you've been once, you have to go again and again and again and again and again. And there's just no other place like it. It's, I'm grinning and thinking about it, but I'm also disappointed because I've not managed to get over there for the last 2 years. And we're all kind of itching to get back over there. Now things are being less restrictive, and the borders are opening up a lot more, and it's a lot easier to get out to places. Yeah. That's my happy place. It's not when it goes wrong. Believe me, I've had a moment out there where I snapped the drive shaft on my car, and I was sort of £1,500 sort of deep in removal costs and stuff. But the German guys who, I don't get to see all the time, but they were there the next morning with the part that I needed, the tools that I needed. And whilst I'm walking around in my pants with my coffee, they were already outside bright and early, stripping my car down. And by the end of the day, we was out lapping again together.
Oh, that's awesome, huh?
It's the same thing with the cars. There's a few people that I'm like with that now in the game. Was James, he's going to probably ruin me for not pronouncing it correctly, but Takezo Rotoro, the one that's done the red DX.
Yeah, and the Cowboy Bebop. He's done the Cowboy Bebop.
Absolute class. He is a really, really good bloke. Me and him speak all the time on WhatsApp. We message each other a lot, and he'll send me pictures of something that he's up to, and I'll send him. You're just having a communication with somebody that you've never met before, but the only reason you've met them is through this. Same as Load of Old Tap. Me and him, we chat all the time, and he then sent me a load of Pokemon cards, which then slapped me in the face with some nostalgia, and that's been a spiral. But it's good. The best thing for me is I'm not in here to make money. I'm not in here to create millions of followers. It's just me doodling about, seeing what I can create. And if somebody likes it, great. And I've met a fair few nice people along the way.
The Game Boys must be such a kind of like a fun little tinker compared to the cars, because Game Boy can't kill you.
No, so the thing, a car can.
So the car has such a serious level of consequences and cost. I mean, it's probably let's be honest, it's probably going to, at your skill level, the amount of driving you've done and how intimate you are with your cars, it's probably going to cost you a lot more before it's going to hurt you, which means that the Game Boys are just like, man, I think if it takes me three shells to get this right, then
yeah,
who cares? You buy a bunch of them from China, and it's all good.
I'd hate to think on the amount of knuckles I've bruised and cut, the amount of bolts I've shed, or the amount of swearing I've done
underneath the car in an English winter, and smacking your knuckles against something that wasn't supposed to be.
I'm very lucky. I've got quite a big garage at the end of my garden, which is accessible from the back of my house. I've got a pit in there, but it still doesn't make it any easier when it's freezing cold. And, all you've got is a coffee that you've left on the side that's now an iced coffee. But the sim that you see in the picture, I bought during lockdown. And it was just for me just to... I'm not a fantastic gamer. I grew up with PlayStations, Xboxes, and Game Boys and stuff, but I'll play some Call of Duty with my friends online, and I'll be the worst person on the team. If I could play Project Cars, which is a lot more sim related versus, say, Forza, which I'll go on just to mess about with my pals.
Yeah.
It's very good for me just to learn the basic lines of a track, and especially at Nürburgring, where you've got 100 plus corners. just knowing what's coming up next.
Brake markers and massive. The colours of a fence and
stuff. Yeah. It never prepares you for the actual thing.
Well,
I'd like to think I'm far better in the car than on The Sims, but it's just there as a... And it's good, you know, it's in a room where I've got a little monitor and my Xbox is plugged in. And after work, if I've got not much to do, I can sit on there and kill a couple of hours and have a good time. And it's something that's probably going to follow me around and probably turn into a more expensive thing with a Fanatec or something that's a bit more expensive. But
does your work relate to the linked. Cars or Game Boys or anything?
I work on the railway. Right. I work on the trains, so I'm a revenue officer on the trains.
What's that?
But ticket inspector.
Oh, okay.
So
the only people that can have the shits with you are the people that are doing the wrong thing, right?
That's it. But there's but Game Boy related. I've worked with him now for the best part of almost 10 years. Is my pal Jim. We've said that if we were not friends at work, if we never met friends, we'd probably never have met, and we probably would never have become friends. But he's basically like my brother, and one of the best things that I've done Game Boy wise is it's a bit further down on my page. There's a DMG that was his childhood Game Boy, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he had lost his mum, and it was in his shed when they were sorting the house.
Right.
And he hasn't had it for years, and it had no back cover on it. The shell was yellowed. It had no lens, and it had the lines on it. And I said to him, give it to me. I'm going to sort it for you. And again, through a few sort of tutorials, reading Greg's book, I'd sorted the screen, I cleaned it all up, and there's a few pictures of the process going through. And then what's the process again? When they
retro brighting,
that's it. I retro brighted the Game Boy, and I think it's on the 20th of April. If you can see it, it's just below.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. The one you did for Deadpool and Jim.
Yeah, that's it.
And yeah, it looks like the final product looks like, you can see before. This looks like mint. Beautiful. Mint.
And that is the only thing that was not original on that was the lens, because he needed one, and the battery cover, because he never had one. Everything else on that, I cleaned up for him, and it works absolutely perfectly. And it's now displayed on his windowsill or his bookcase next to, I think it's Trunks and Vegeta as the models, Goku and Trunks.
Yeah.
I don't think he plays it much, but he's a massive gamer. He loves his gaming. But that, although there's no, I haven't done a crazy paint job on that. I haven't done any mods to the screens. Just for pure pleasure of outcome and knowing what that actually meant to somebody, because it's one of the only things that he's got from his childhood, and it's now perfect, absolutely mint. And it honestly, that's probably one of the absolute favorite things that I've done Game Boy related, flat out, is that, just because the process of being able to take something, not having to paint it, but just using other methods to make it, you know,
using great your skills to make someone happy.
Yeah, and that to me, and I know it honestly meant a lot to him. Like when I, you know, if you see Jim, he's a big bloke.
Did you make him cry?
I think he was almost there, and you know, somebody's gonna be listening to this. He's probably gonna throttle me and whatnot. But if you see him, he's a big bloke, shaved head, big beard, but that's his, you know, and it's that to me, I think, is still the absolute best thing that I've done.
And that comes up a lot. A lot of people come up. Yeah, I think, I know personally at least two or three people that are doing, you know, builds and restos and stuff. And quite often it's just someone who's, you know, mid to late 30s and eyes aren't what they used to be. And, you know, now we've got phones and switches. They're like, I can't see this, but I still have my original Mario. This was given to me by my dad when we flew through Hong Kong and I wouldn't shut up. Can you make this better? And the person's like, can I ever? And they do exactly what you did. They just clean it up, put a nice LCD in it, and that person may play it twice for the rest of its life. But it is there for them to now kind of a little portal back to the day they got it, you know?
Beautiful. And it's going to last a little bit longer now because, you know, these things are old now and they're such basic items, but it's great to see that so many of them are still, you know, even in such horrid condition, they can still be used. Like I say, three of mine, they all survived a house fire, and one of them was so bad, they were literally black inside.
Right.
Because of the smoke damage.
Oh, I mean, they weren't, right.
Yeah, the smoke damage was probably, this was a fair few years ago. I mean,
so they didn't get burnt, but they were in a room where...
No. The smoke damage was horrific. When I opened up a part, my fingers were covered in soot. The motherboard was black.
And that's why we die. That stuff goes in your lungs. And
yeah, I was asleep when it happened. And, you know, I had to get pulled out the window. It was quite horrifying. But there's a Game Boy that I've done, which is my personal Game Boy Color, which, again, I think I've said to you before, is the motherboard out of my yellow... original OG. It's got an OSD screen. I've done a patina shell for it, and then Nat the Nerd sent me some LED buttons. But that, you know, that Game Boy, the internals of that Game Boy survived the fire. It's crazy. And it's there sort of 30 years later. It's 25 years later. It's still sat there now. It's on my shelf. I don't play it as much as I'd like, but it's there, and it probably will always be there. So
that's bonkers, man. It spins me out when we look at all this stuff that's going down now with all the different mods and UV prints and stuff. And, you know, this will all go back down again. And then, you know, at the moment, there's a real hunger. Like, you know, I picked up a blue pocket, and it had it has a different label on the back. And I was like, what's this? And I was asking people, they're like, oh, that's one of the European ones. So I was like, well, what do you mean? Anyway, so I do your research, and I found this webpage and that webpage. There's all these little sort of chunks of knowledge everywhere, and people are starting to kind of put it all together. There was this limited one and that limited one, and the white one only came out, white didn't only come out in Japan. But like, if this little sort of bubble bursts, which everything sort of has its waves, and then like in 20 years or 25 years or something, when God knows what we're doing, we'll all just be plugged into something, and there'll be all these like rando UV printed and patina painted Game Boys, and people will have no idea.
When did
Nintendo do this? This is insane. What were they on the week they did this? This is beautiful, you know?
Yeah. But the beauty has always been that, you know, you can create something just through a thought. And like, I don't know how. I've got absolutely no idea how. When she's obviously done the modded Game Boy Club, and you do the monthly competitions.
Yeah,
she's done the horror one. I've got no idea how my design actually won the votes. I've got no idea. Yeah. So
is that the one with the
purge one?
The face, the glowing face. Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So simple, and I mean literally anybody could do this. And there was a few guys on there that I personally think should have won. I mean, I didn't even vote for my own one. I voted for somebody else's, because the workmanship in some of these is absolutely unreal. People seem to have liked mine, and you know, I can only thank everyone for that. But it's, you know, like I say, this what I'm doing isn't out of anybody's reach. Anybody can do this. It's just a little time and a little effort. The preparation for everything is key. Literally, that's all it is. Take your time, and you can all just do whatever you wish to do with any of your Game Boys. But it's simple, effective, and you know, there's so many different ways of doing this that my brain's hurting now thinking about what I can do for the next one. Or I'll go outside, I'll start looking, how can I do this? What is everybody going to start thinking of? Oh no, we're bored of this guy now. We need to get something else going. But it's it's good fun. It is good fun.
It really is. And especially when you do this, and then someone else does their bit, and then someone else does their bit stuff. And what's really beautiful is there's other people like that just are happy just to help out by just buying. I don't want to use it as a crutch, but I can't really participate in any of the raffles. I avoid anything like that because of exactly what you were saying before. Like I've talked to a few people in the US, and they're like, I kind of have to almost exclude Australia from any of my giveaways.
Yeah, I've seen a few of that.
A pain in the ass, and there's just too many disappointed people out there that just their beautiful Super Nintendo sits in the box for a year until it doesn't cost £100. And so I wish I could be one of those people that could just, you know, like I could rattle off half a dozen. You know, James, he plays like he's got some shells that
I'm real.
I want. Yeah. You've got at least three shells that are probably sitting in a drawer, and I'm like, how much? Just send them to me. You know, I just it annoys me, and I just get frustrated. But I can do this. I can kick the can, and you know, help other people find you guys. That's something.
Yeah, it's really appreciated. Honestly, I'm so sort of. I feel honoured that you've asked me to come on here. There's so many people that you'd be here all day if you was to ask to shout out everybody that you've looked at and thought they've given me an idea or they've helped me do something. You know, it's impossible to almost mention every single person. But you know,
once you get your feed sort of populated, like you said before, it just starts to kind of grow, and you see this, you see that, and. It is really awesome. Yeah. Do you kind of collect? Are you able to hang on to much, or do you find you? Because a lot of people they sort of turn their stuff over because they run out. Like I find a lot of the people I've spoken to that are in Europe, it's like I live in a little flat and I've got one shelf and I'm very blessed to have a bunch of space. And a lot of people are, but a lot of the people I meet like from the UK or Europe, I live in a little flat and I've only got room for like four or five. And I'm like, I can see at least 25 to 35 different Game Boys on your Instagram. Where are they all? And they're either in a box or they have to move them on. Are you able to hang on to much?
So I'm quite lucky. You know, my house has got plenty of space. My personal Game Boy is never going to be leaving me ever.
Of course not.
That's just my childhood Game Boy. I've got a DMG because I always wanted a DMG. I've done that. Mm-hmm. I've got a Game Boy Advance and I've got a PSP, a PS Vita that, dare I say it, is, again, going to rattle a few feathers, but it's emulated and it's so much easier and sort of clearer even compared to the original Game Boys. You know, I've got access to 10,000 games on it. So I've got them and I have got drawers of, you know, shells that have either been practiced or I've not been overly happy with the outcome. But almost everything you see on my Instagram has been something that somebody's commissioned or something that I've done and somebody's then approached me and said, I want this. So yeah, literally near enough everything that you see on there is now in the hands of somebody else, which when I think about it, it's actually quite scary because there's quite a bit on there that I'm sitting there thinking, I remember doing that. But it's, like I said, my Game Boy is never going to go anywhere. I doubt my DMG will. The Game Boy Advance, everybody loves an Advance. But for me, it was never the one that, you know, I suppose it's the...
It just wasn't your generation shape.
It was the next one on. But I've got one and I've got a couple of games on there. But like I've done my DMG, I've done a Patina shell on, and then I see and I stumbled across Retro Gear Customs doing Jurassic Park Sega handhelds.
Right.
And he then done a Jurassic Park themed Game Boy DMG shell, and I messaged him. I said, I need that because I'm fascinated with Jurassic Park, one of my favorite movie franchises.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, okay. I'll get you one made up if you want. And I said, yep. So my DMG now has his shell on.
That's very cool.
This is what I mean. I mean, I'm quite happy to paint hundreds of shells for people, but I'm also really happy to have the work of somebody else on my own personal stuff because I've looked at that. It's simple, it's effective, and it's like, yep. Bags, that's mine. But no, apart from that, I don't really collect much. The only thing I seem to collect is car parts. But I've got what I call as a little games room, which is the bottom part of a loft converted bedroom, and my Sims in there. And I've still got to put some shelves up. I've got people bought me loads of pop figures over the last few years that I want to get on the shelves up there. And you know, I grew up loving comics. I'm a massive Thor fan. When I was a kid, I loved Thor and I loved all the...
Well, you would have grown up with like Judge Dredd in 2000 AD.
Yeah. Love
that stuff's the business.
Everything like that. So you know, I've got a lot of stuff that, you know, normal people, but people that aren't included would say, oh, you're a geeky guy. I'd say probably say, yeah, I've got a lot of stuff like that. And it's going to go into my games room and it's on the walls. And like I say, I have no need to now collect sort of 20-year-old Pokemon cards. But again, it's a slap in the face of when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Wandering around. Had I known then what I knew now, I would never have opened packets. I would have just gone to my local shop and we used to have a little store. And there was a guy in there who owned the store. His name was George. He was an amazing guy. He'd come in, we'd always be in there with my mum and whatnot, and she'd go collect the papers. And when we was on the way to school, George would be there. He said, does your mum know you're spending your money on Pokemon cards? So yes, George, she knows. And me and my friend, we must have been about 10. And we was on the way to school. He lived on the road next to me. And we was on the way to school. And we have, obviously, you know, we have £5 note, £10 note, £20 notes. And we had £50 notes, which were very rarely seen.
Oof.
And we was walking down the road and there was one on the floor stuck behind a car's tyre.
Oh, what?
And I was like, what? We're having that. And as 10-year-olds, the first thing we thought of doing, we were now rich. You know, we'd won the lottery. Yeah. We could have retired at that age. We went straight to George's and we spent 50 quid on Pokemon cards. And he then told my mum that I'd come in and spent 50 quid on Pokemon cards. My mum then asked me where I found the £50. I then got an absolute rollicking because I hadn't handed it into somebody. And, I had my Pokemon cards and they all ruined because I had I then sort of ruined them all by wrapping them in elastic bands to fit in my pocket. So I've now decided that I've got a folder full of them now. The original 151, I've completed them.
Oh, good on you.
I just now need to sort them in sets and then complete the individual sets. And then for no particular reason other than I'm old enough that I can now and I can sit there and just do what they're doing.
I can't help but feel that, you know, that was, say, what, 20-odd years ago, like 22, 23 years ago. I can't help but feel that 22, 23 years from now, there's not going to be things like that. It's just the world is just sort of seems to be, it's like a tumble dryer. It's all coming back and they're kind of just milking what used to be good. And, you know, in 25 years, I don't buy toys I don't go and buy what's aimed at a 10-year-old now as an adult, really. I've done some Pokemon cards with my daughter and things like that. But in 20-odd years, surely none of the Batman figures or the Star Wars stuff that's sitting in our local, you know, Target shops is going to be worth
money.
Anything in 20 years from now. It's just going to be rubbish.
I've had this conversation with Jim, who I've done the DMG for at work, and I've had this conversation because he's really into, he's bought sort of Yu-Gi-Oh cards, like more recent ones and Magic cards. And, you know, again, the world of YouTube and stuff is just, like you say, everything now seems to be a replication or a throwback to what would have been an 80s or 90s childhood dream. You know, all the films are being remade. All of the films are having 80s themes. You've got things like Stranger Things that is an 80s show. Everything is trying to go back. But, yeah, I can't imagine that anything now, which is such mass-produced, is going to be, you know, I can't see it.
It's, even cars and stuff. Know. Like, tell me, in 30 years, is the 2020 Mustang going to be worth anything?
It's not iconic. It's not, you know, there's certain things that changed what we knew of as, you know, Pokemon hit the scene 25 years ago and it was an explosion. And if I'm right in thinking, it's still one of the highest franchises on Earth or highest sort of money-making companies on the planet.
They're still printing money. Like, they're printing it. It's bonkers.
You're never going to... Yeah. You're just never going to compete now with the original base sets. Or the original sets that the kids, when it first came out, grew up with. Even with all of these sets now, there's so many of them.
Yeah.
But I just can't imagine that they're ever going to have the same impact as what the originals did. The same as the games, you know. Yeah. I can't imagine now going and buying a DS, I don't know what the most recent, or a Switch. I can't imagine going into a store and buying the latest Pokemon Switch game and that being as, you know, important
as valued as Blue, Ruby, Red,
and Yellow. Yeah,
that's right.
It's something that was I can't see it, but
it's a different thing, it's interesting. Too. Like my like I said, my daughter and I got into it for probably a year and a half, and we got in on a couple of like release boxes and 48 boosters, and we had a bloody good time. And I felt awful because I was totally encouraging my child to take up gambling. but we kind of had a good time with it, and we got involved a little tiny bit with a couple of pre-release events where you'd go and you would get given a pre-release build pack, and you'd have a few boosters and a couple of extras and a kit and stuff. And it was really good fun. But when I was sitting there, and then I went back and played a couple of times, and I found it really challenging because it was very much pay to win. It was just about, it was more or less just loot boxes. You could buy cards individually and all would fluctuate based on a championship that was played somewhere in Europe. And this dude played this deck, and now a card that you could have picked up for 80 cents for a dozen 2 weeks ago was now worth $12. And it's just, it became really hard to kind of swallow. But I would look around the room, and of the 30 to 35 people there playing Pokemon that day, there was 4 kids.
Yeah.
These were all grown adults with big money, big budgets, and and a lot of kind of like ego, unfortunately, taking what is a kid's card game way too far. And I just, so I said to my daughter, I can't do this anymore. I'm really disappointed. Can't compete with this, I can't compete with them. I'm really disappointed in these adults, and they love it. And I need to just leave them to love it kind of thing. And we played a bit at home, and that was fun enough for us. And we had a really good time. And
I think it's getting to a point now where, especially the older stuff, like it's now so inaccessible to people because the prices of stuff, like the ones that I've collected, I probably couldn't go and get graded. They're in decent enough condition for a folder. They look good. I've got a lot of the common cards.
Yeah.
I've not spent loads on them. Obviously, the Charizard and the Venusaur were the big hitters. But and even then, the Charizard's in actually really quite good condition. But if you look on eBay now, everything has got quite a horrific price tag for it, which was essentially a card that was inside at a time they were like £2.50 per pack. You're now seeing them at £500 to £1,000 a pack, and it's but then you get the celebrity people that I know Jake Paul, whether you like him or hate him, he went out to do his boxing fight with a Charizard around his neck, which then made the market explode because now everybody's going, oh, I've got a Charizard somewhere, and they would have dug it out of their loft or their shoebox. And then they've whacked it on eBay for £300-400, and people are paying it because they're all trying to do the same thing. And like I said, the release boxes, the 25 anniversary ones, I tried to grab one just for, for the sake of being able to open a couple of packs with some cards in it that I don't like any of the newer stuff, but it would have, they had a couple of prints from the older stuff, and I thought, okay, I can't find one anywhere. And then you've got the scalpers on the Facebook marketplaces that are now putting the boxes up for twice as much, and it's just like, it's like the Xboxes when they first came out, the most recent Series X,
the PlayStation and stuff.
People are buying them at retail and then selling them for sort of twice the money. But if people are paying for them,
that's right.
They're always going to be people that are going to sell
exactly them. Right. I can't whinge about the fact that a Game Boy costs $100 because there's people out there buying it. And like I'm into mountain biking now. Here in Australia, you could probably buy a decent brand new from the shop, sort of like 250cc dirt bike, that for someone like me that wants to get into dirt biking, I could buy that from the shop for around $12,500 ish. I could definitely pick up a secondhand one for $7,000 or $8,000. If I want to buy a bicycle, that's a mountain bike. There's a lot of shit going down in mountain bikes these days. But if I want to buy the mountain bike that'd be like my Porsche, we're talking $15,000, $16,000, $18,000. Why? Because people are paying it. These companies are going to keep doing it. They're like, you dudes want to pay for it, then okay, let's just keep pumping stuff out. And there's some people that whinge about it and they go, oh, they're too expensive. But what does happen and what people don't realize is the long game is that, say, like there's new technology, whether it be like a wireless shifter or a wireless seat dropper or something. And it's like, it's $2,500 now for that one item, whatever. But 2 or 3 years down the track, it'll be $1,500. Another two or three years down the track, it'll be staple on all bikes, And if you want to get one, it'll be like $300. But you've got to let these people go ahead and sort of like
spend their money first.
They're the backbone of the market, and they let these innovations become reality for the rest of us down here in the pits. You know, like it's
just
I've got one of those. I've got an elite trainer box of Champions Path. It was like when we were just getting out, and it was like $160. It's still wrapped. And I'm looking at them, and they're still only about $180. But there's like a buddy of mine bought one, and he got the Charizard and a bunch of other shit.
Yeah.
And for $180, he made $2,500 off that one box.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just leaving this sitting here sealed, and who knows? One day it might just become the thing and put my daughter through college.
Or you never know.
Buy her a car or something. You know, like it's
at 160, you can't complain that it's ruined you for the you know, for the month. And you need to. A guy I work with, he does it with Lego. You know, he buys the full sets of Lego.
Yeah, yeah.
And he then breaks them down, and you know, he'll sell the wheel. And it's something so simple. I know it's time consuming, but it's simple.
Yeah.
He's taking something that anybody could do, and his eBay is consistently ping.
Wow.
Because how many people have open a box of Lego and you know something's busted or they've lost that and you can't go into the store to buy it because they're you know exclusive for that set, and he's like, well, hold on, I've got the sets here that I'm breaking down. I do it with cars, to be honest. I sound like somebody that doesn't stop, and I think it's actually a bit of a reality that I'm never really sat down for too long. But I buy I don't know if you call them Golfs or Rabbit GTIs.
So
I've had a fair few of them, but they're worth so much more in parts that you know but the thing is because they're getting older now and the parts are not as accessible anymore. If you've got a car that's we have I don't know if you guys have them, but we have like an MOT test that a car has to be fit for for another year, so it goes through. If you get a car that requires a little bit of work or is a bit too expensive to keep on the road but has got enough parts in it that you can make the money, I'll be happy. I'll have that. And if I've got it in my garage, I can take it down. And the parts market for Golfs is, you know, they're up there with some like the Civics. You know, as soon as there's parts available, people are swarming and off they go. But it then gives another person's car the life that this car wouldn't have been able to have had. So it's, you know, you're trying to keep the circulation down. But some of these flippers and the scalpers, it's just part of, I think social media has probably made a hell of a lot worse now, because, you know, people see celebrities or other people doing something or getting something, then everybody else wants it. And then the companies think, oh, actually we can throw on a bit more money here. Or,
I think
it's a never ending circle.
It's easy with the PlayStation 5, it's easy to blame. It's easy to say, oh, those disgusting scalpers, but, I can tell you right now, Sony is sitting back and controlling everything that goes down. I think it was maybe the Steam Deck when it got announced. And I think you had to put like a $5 deposit or a $10 deposit or something. And at least that kind of deters people from, you know, obviously your big scalpers are trying to get hold of 100 of something. They're like, $10. This is going to be a $1,100 console once I sell it. So they don't really give a shit. Yeah. But it does start to trim the fat a little bit. I mean, Sony sat back and watched what they were retailing as a, I don't know, $700, $600 console from, you know, whatever, Target or whatever, or the electronic stores, and watched them, people pay $1,200 for it. And they're like, okay, that's free data for us. Yeah, we know what people are willing to pay now. It's
scary. The minute this is,
Well, I guess we're getting a little bit grumpy old Manny now, aren't we? We're kind of getting away from talking about your beautiful build.
Trying to sort the world's issues.
Like no one noticed.
we're missing is beers.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, I guess you could. It's a Saturday. You don't play. You play tomorrow, so you could have one.
12 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, it's definitely 12 o'clock here, buddy. we might just have taken up nearly an hour and a half of your time, and I appreciate it. It's really, I've been wanting to try and catch up with you and meet you. And I have these conversations with people. For me, it's hardly even a podcast. It's a conversation, and I'm able to record it and share it. And other people that, you know, the people that you've mentioned, they've spoken to you through text and now they can hear your voice. And
yeah,
other people that have looked at your stuff and they can go, there's a real human behind this Instagram. And I think that's always been the goal of people like yourself and I to say, hey, it wasn't Morrissey, I'm human and I need to be loved. And it's just, it makes everything just that little bit more comfortable throughout our day. And so as I get towards the end, I always like to give my guests an opportunity for shout outs or self-promotion or whatever it is that last little bit. I always have one. And for me this week, it's Terror 1979. I'm going to assume this person was born 1979. John Wan. Now it's one of those Instagrams where there's just a lot of really good photography, a lot of sort of figurine stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, like, there's some commitment. There's one here where it's just a whole bunch of Metroid, like obviously Dread, all the GameCubes, Game Boys. It's all the boxes, and it's pretty amazing. You know, all the Prime Echoes and just a whole bunch of stuff. And that shows a lot of effort. It shows a lot of love, and like I said, some good figurine stuff and just some nice photography. And that's kind of what I want to have in my feed, is just, I look at it and go, oh, that's cool. Or, damn it, I need to buy that now. Must not buy, sort of thing. So go check out Terror 1979 and put that in your feed and find some stuff you like. So, yeah, go, Matt, I'll hand it over to you now. Now, we've mentioned a few people already. We've mentioned T-Peg City 8-Bit, Julianne, Game Boy 7777. Greg at Game Changer Mods and Takero Retro. There's probably going to be some other peeps out there that you want to sort of throw under the bus or lift up high, whatever, however you want to go about it. And yourself, mate. This is about you as well.
Oh, me? I forgot about me. Yeah. First of all, I just want to thank you for letting me come on. It's I've listened to the podcast on the way to work. It's great to have a platform where you get to dive a little bit deeper. But I wish I could mention everybody, because we'd be here for another hour and a half. But there's a few people that, when I first come into this, you know, they were the ones that kind of welcomed me and helped me out a lot more. And it's, you know, I've already mentioned Takazora Rotora James, load of old retro, Game Boy Ace, Jamie's been great, and Game Boys for Life. They've just been, you know, people that they're UK based that I've just had good conversations with. But then you've obviously got 8-Bit Pixel Dust and NXT .stop.please. So Kelly, she's, you know, their work is stuff that you look at and think, this is absolutely,
the girls crush it, don't they? They crush it.
Yeah, they are absolutely smashing it. Julianne Gameboy, so we've already mentioned her, but she's, again, her painting skills are up there with the absolute best. And, you know, it's nice to be mentioned alongside some of these people in some people's posts. And
you rub shoulders with the elite, my friend. You just rocked up.
I really do appreciate it. But these people, there's so many more. But these guys, and like I said, already mentioned Peg City and Marky PI, again, the bigger pages that give the recognition to the smaller guys, it does help massively. And it is massively appreciated. Like I say, this isn't a life-changing sort of money-making expedition for me, which it is for a lot of other people, but it's just something that I'm just enjoying, and it's nice to be part of something that hopefully everybody else is enjoying, and hopefully they're enjoying whatever it is that I'm throwing out there and ruining lovely OEM Game Boys.
Yeah, people are. I mean, I look at what I see down here. Let me just... So on the... When was this? May the 3rd, you had, and like, this is only an analytic, this is not an indication of success, but on May the 3rd, you had 500 followers.
Yeah.
And you've currently got,
hang on, 2,000.
Nearly 2,000. So, like I said, this is, I think it's safe to say you're not the type that hunts down these sort of numbers. But at the same time, they are an indication of the effort that you're putting in and the quality of what you're producing. And people want to see your stuff in their feed. And that is a measurement of success. You've got to accept that. That's great.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. I'm not very good at taking the compliment side of things, but it is nice. It is nice knowing that what I'm doing is being appreciated or at least liked. So yeah, I do thank everyone that's been part of it or has helped me along the way, because it's a tough little role to get into. Like I say, you don't realize how many people are involved in this or how many people are invested in the hobby, and it's
I think you go about it probably one of the most the detriment to yourself is pretty minimal, because you just sort of take stuff on here and there, and your goals are very pure in that you're just sort of trying to help people out and make it, and you're probably just getting a little high on your own supply here and there, and that's all you need to sort of. I really take my hat off to those out there that are making a living from this,
doing this full
Greg
time, boy.
And his brother. This is what they do. They just punch out hundreds of these a week. That's all they do. And I'm like, dude, that is. And he's, when I spoke to him some time ago, he was like, yeah, it's cool. It's what we're doing. Like you think he just had an avocado farm and it's just, you just grab avocados and push them out. It's like, to me, it seems so bizarre that you can push so many Game Boys through your workshop and so many people, like there's such a market for it. It astounds me.
Yeah. It's crazy. It really is. But again, these people they've put in, I know how hard it is to do these just sort of every now and then. And you've got people that are doing it sort of flat out 24/7. I'll take my hat off to them.
And the financial investment that I've spoken to a couple of people that have bought a box of 120 or 60 Game Boys of various conditions and models from a Japanese source or whatever. And it's like a couple of $1,000 put down. And now they've got to turn that over and make it work. And you're talking about
the screens and the shelves.
It's a big deal. So I would much rather personally be where you are. to be honest, just enjoying your craft and putting smiles on faces. And if you can hook yourself up with a couple of extra bits to make your collection, float without, that's great. Thank you, buddy. I really do appreciate your time. I think anybody that's listening to you today is like, that dude. Yep. Want some of that. So if you're in Europe and you can afford it, then maybe someone should come and hook you up and talk to you about commissions. You do take commissions. You've mentioned it a couple of times.
I do. Yeah, I do. Yep. I do. People often message me and ask for something. And I usually get given good free rein for something, but it's, I don't have a website. It literally all just goes through my Instagram. Like I say, this isn't a business, but it's just a little something that if people want something, I'm happy to hopefully give them what they require.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. All right, bud, I'm going to let you go. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And you and I will be in touch. And when you're in Queensland, I will take you to the Crocodile place, and that will be bloody awesome. There's a bit of track up here. There's a little track out sort of not far from here that has it's not track. They probably have track days, but if you go out there, there's cars racing. But it's kind of they'll have a thing where you have to have sort of like a stock Hyundai XL, but with a roll cage and fire suits.
Yeah.
So
and that throws out the rental car issue.
Yes, it does take the rental car. Awesome, awesome.
Fastest cars in the world, rental car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No worries.
Good man. Cheers, Scott. All right, bud.
Have a great one. See you, mate.
Thanks. You too, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye.